Chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. I am thrilled to have Nalini Pavlarapu on the show today. Nalini is the Enterprise Data Science Strategy Lead for Bayer. Nalini, I am so excited to have you with me today. We've been trying to make this happen now for several months, and both of our schedules have been so crazy. But the very first time I met you, Jim Swanson had introduced me to you. And the very first time I met you, I thought, wow, I've got to get you on our show because you've just got such a great, interesting background. So
it's a pleasure to be here, Lisa. I'm so excited to be here and talk to you about the AI and all the new technologies.
Absolutely. Well, I just know that our listeners are going to really enjoy this episode. So let's just jump right in because we've got more to talk about mm-hmm. than we probably have the time to do today. But I want to just talk a little bit about how you grew up.
I grew up in India. My father is a farmer. My mother is a housewife, a multi-generational household, parents, grandparents. And I had a normal, happy childhood. No big expectations, no big aspirations. My parents gave me the freedom to do what I wanted to do. I was just going through the school, and that's pretty much I remember. But farming was a big part of our family, and it's very much integrated into the lives that we had. And it was kind of a day-to-day business on taking care of the farming and taking care of the community as a result of being farming, because it's very much integrated in the community.
So did you grow up having to milk cows, or
not really.
More crops that your dad was growing?
Not really. As much as I grew up in a family where farming was the main thing, we had so much help in the house. So I was lucky that I didn't have to do much work at the house at all. Mm-hmm. Many of the things were taken care of. And for me, it's more of just going to school, coming back, having fun with the friends. So that might be one thing that I would say is different growing up in my family versus the perception that people have with other farming households. We are lucky that my ancestors come from an area where it's primarily progressive farmers. The farmers are very hardworking and very progressive. As a result of that, the farmers were able to provide certain standard of living for their families. So I'm lucky to be coming from such a background.
Right. So you went to school in India, mm-hmm. and then you decided, though, that you wanted to come to the States. And there was a reason why you wanted to come to the States, and there was a university that you had chosen. So what got you interested in that?
I finished my undergrad, and I was looking for coming to U.S. to do graduate school. And this was around 2001. Human genome was sequenced in 2000. So there was a lot of buzz about there is this human genome, and now if we apply technology to it, we can solve pretty much many of the health problems that humans were facing. And so there was this emerging field, bioinformatics, and it showed a lot of promise. I always had an interest for computer science and mathematics. So I was looking for an area where I could integrate computer science, mathematics to life sciences, and bioinformatics was really attractive. As I was looking for schools which offered bioinformatics degree during that time, not many did. And Georgia Tech was one of those premier universities which offered that. Because of its reputation in computer science and engineering and mathematics, I felt like that's the right university to go. Applied, got in there. Lucky, so fortunate that they got in there. Now, if I look back, I think, oh, wow, what were they thinking to get me in there? Then when I went to the university, I was totally blown away. The amount of intellectual capital that was there and how good the people were, it's unbelievable. And I was nowhere close to them. My job was just to learn and develop myself. Mm-hmm. So I took on any opportunity or many opportunities that were coming along the way, took many classes, and built myself in the foundational skills of math, computer science, and engineering. As this was going in the first year of my grad school, I got introduced to AI. I had no idea about artificial intelligence
or anything.
Anything before that.
Sure.
Through another student of mine, I got introduced into it, and I got put on a project to work with AI to help with the CDC, Center for Disease Control in Atlanta, to help them with their epidemiological research. When I got into, or when I was on that project, something intuitively came to me that I was drawn to AI, is mm-hmm. what I would say. Mm-hmm. And I could see the potential of what it can do. So worked on that project. Along the same way, I realized that I need to build more foundational skills, so took some classes along that way. And in my grad school, my professor was primarily working on cancer research. So there was microarray technology was also new during that time. And what microarray technology did was providing large data, same with the human genome. So we were looking for how do you analyze all that data and then how do you combine that with the genetic information? And there is no way you could do it one by one. You have to leverage big data technologies, which was one of those was AI. And so everything came together. And since from the first year, I got to work on projects related to analyzing large data sets to draw insights from them. Ultimately, at the end, impacting people's lives.
Right.
That's pretty much how my grad school was spent. As I was graduating, I got introduced to Monsanto.
Through a career fair, right?
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. I have to tell a story there, too. So as I said, I was primarily focusing on AI and also doing more work in humans and cancer. Mm-hmm. My thesis was human-chimpanzee genome comparisons, and I had other projects in cancer research. So I was thinking maybe I'll go to technological companies like Google or Amazon or go to pharma industry. And I wasn't that much thinking about ag. And usually Monsanto does not usually come to Georgia Tech because we are way in the south, mm-hmm. and this is a Midwest company. Mm-hmm. But there were a couple of years where they came to Georgia Tech Career Fair because there was one individual in the HR who was working remotely in that area. So she took advantage of
gotcha.
That and came over. Mm-hmm. I got connected with her, and I was fascinated with the opportunities they were talking about, working at the interface of the engineer, scientist, and computer scientist. And that really fascinated me, and which made me take on the job mm-hmm. that I took.
Right. And it's kind of funny to me because you kind of came full circle, right?
Yes. Yes. That,
because Monsanto Bear serves the farmer.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Yeah. That's how it feels like. Ag background growing up, then totally moved away from it and went to engineering, computer science, and more in humans. Mm-hmm. Then took a job in ag, applying those skills that I learned in grad school. And now with Bayer, it's everything coming together.
It's everything.
Yes.
Oh, what a story. Yeah. So you ended up getting two master's degrees, right?
Uh-huh.
And then you went on to get your PhD in bioinformatics as
yes.
well, right?
As I said, Lisa, when I went to the school, I felt like I didn't have anything, and everyone was so smarter than me, So I needed to develop myself. And one of that is taking classes and educating myself, because I took those classes that led to those degrees that you talked about.
Well, clearly Georgia Tech saw something in you, Nalini. Even if you didn't see it in yourself, they saw it in you, because they don't take just everyone, right? I know they are a top school for technology. So you talked about Monsanto. So you ended up coming to Monsanto upon graduation. And I want you to talk about, I know you've had many roles at Monsanto, but the one that I really want you to focus on is you were one of the very first, if not the first, data scientist at Monsanto and helped build that whole group there. And I know the predictive analytics and the data science has been radically transformed. Mm-hmm. Monsanto, they're a different company than they were mm-hmm. when you started. Talk a little bit about that journey, building that team or helping build that team, and what was it like for you as a woman? I'm not sure how many women were in that group, but talk a little bit about that journey, if you would.
Yeah, definitely. Not many women at all. So this was back in 2007. As I graduated, I got connected with Monsanto and took a role there. Initially, during the conversation, it felt like a role which is at the interface of all these different disciplines. But a couple of months into the role, I realized that I could do more. And we could really do something with the data science or AI. So I went to my boss and told them, is there a way that we could make it more research-oriented and come up with a role that can have a bigger impact? Mm-hmm. My boss and his boss, they heard about AI, but weren't really sure what AI can be doing for the company. They were in that experimental phase. Mm-hmm. And then when they learned that I had a background in that, they asked me, can we test here to see if there is any applicability that we have at Monsanto? So we started with an experimental project, and that was quite successful. And that gave us reasons to believe that there is applicability here. So then the second project we moved on is to change the way we advance our products in our pipeline. That was the second experiment, and I worked on that too, and we were getting promising results. And very soon we realized that we need to build a team, because this is going to grow big.
Right.
So I was in charge of hiring the team as well. And during that time, we were not known in the industry. And there were not that many data scientists out there too. And those data scientists were looking for the Amazons or Netflix or Google for their potential opportunities. So we really had to work through to draw the attention of these good engineers, good scientists. And we took a totally unconventional approach. Usually when you hire people into Monsanto to do some kind of research work, you hire people with the life sciences background.
Right.
We took an unconventional approach of bringing in electrical engineers or mathematicians, because we thought those are the people who can build these sophisticated algorithms. And at the same time, we can train them in the life sciences mm-hmm. Discipline. It was hard to hire people, but also I would say when things are hard, and when you work on it, it has a lot of opportunities in there. So really, the initial people that we hired now, if I look at them, they are excellent and they are doing amazing things in their careers, leading teams either at Monsanto or other companies. So fast forward, in 5 years, we built a team. We were able to show that innovations have quite a bit of promise and have the ability to transform the product development pipeline. At the same time, we encountered quite a bit of cultural resistance, because the product that we were working on is how do we enable better decision-making in our research pipeline.
Mm-hmm.
And research pipeline was very sacred for Monsanto. It's our bread and butter. And the pipeline is being managed by really strong scientists and breeders. Massive experience, super smart, and they really know and care for what they are doing. Many times the experience is 20, 30 years, And they have delivered quite a number of good products for the company. Mm-hmm. So there is huge experience and huge knowledge there. Many of us were in the initial stages of the careers. We did not have life sciences background. We were coming with the technical background. And we were telling that we could build algorithms that can help with better decision making. And because AI was not known outside during that time, what it can do for the outside world, it was seen as a threat. And many times it was seen as humans versus AI.
Right. Well, elimination of jobs. Right.
So then it was first, are these algorithms any good? Second, are these algorithms going to come and now eliminate my job? And so that was a huge pushback that we received.
I can imagine.
And we had to work quite a bit mm-hmm. through that. It's not the algorithms that will replace the humans. It's the algorithms are there to assist the humans. It's humans plus AI. And the second aspect of that is these algorithms are not working on their own, or we are not just building the algorithms. It's the partnership. And the scientists are the people who are giving the knowledge that goes into the algorithms.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, it's their algorithms, and these algorithms are there to help them perform better.
To perform better. Well, I want to dive more into that because I can only imagine how difficult that was. But mm-hmm. I want to dive into that. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be right back with Nalini.
We at Technology Partners understand the difficulty to find work that is engaging, yields high pay, and facilitates a work-life balance. Over the past 25 years, we have enhanced the IT teams of over 244 client companies and placed more than 3,000 IT professionals with them on short-term or permanent basis. Our staff includes over 300 experienced IT professionals. So if you're looking to take the next step in your career, visit jobs.technologypartners.net, apply for a job, and one of our expert recruiters will be happy to connect with you.
Nalini, welcome back. There may be people in our audience that say, this all sounds so fascinating. I'm really interested in this, but I don't even really understand what is a data scientist and what do data scientists do? What's a day in the life like for a data scientist? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Definitely. Data science is a combination of four disciplines, I would say. Usually you see three out in the web, but I will add one more to it. So it's a combination of strong computer science skills, strong mathematical skills. There is domain in there, which is very important and which is often ignored. That is really the third leg. And the fourth one is leadership. Leadership, collaboration, how do you work in teams? That's an important fourth component. And adding one more thing to that leadership, it's more of taking initiative and having that entrepreneurial skills. So it's a combination of all those four that makes a true data scientist. Many people think that they have strong math or computer science background, and they tend to ignore the other two aspects of it, the domain or leadership, and there is only so much you could do for them. At the end of the day, it's how you're applying the technology to a business problem, enhancing that business decision, and generating impact. That is where it comes. And you need a lot of leadership and initiative because many people do not know what data science can do for them. They're still in that learning mode. Mm-hmm. So you have to have enough of that entrepreneurial spirit to be able to see new ideas and also the influential skills to be able to bring people along the journey.
And what I'm thinking, Nalini, as you're talking, I mean, it is that domain knowledge is so important to understand the business. I don't think people in technology today can just be people that are coding, right? The business acumen and understand what exactly is it that we do and why do we do it? And then you look at the challenges and then say, how can technology help solve this challenge that we have, right?
Yes.
That's really what it is.
Yes.
And so, you know, never before have we gathered so much data.
Yes.
But data that is just sitting there is of no use, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, how do you use that data to glean better insights?
So business acumen and leadership are two critical components of becoming a really good data scientist or data science leader.
So I'm thinking Bayer Crop Science. The customer is the farmer. Okay, so how has this really practically applied at Bayer now with what you're doing with predictive analytics and that sort of thing?
We use predictive analytics or data science in two ways at Bayer. We have internal customers where we are trying to transform our operations or transform how the way we do product development. That's one aspect of it, transforming the core of our business. So our customers are more of the internal employees. And we have external customers, which are farmers, as you mentioned, Lisa. And in terms of farmers, the main application of predictive analytics is providing them advisory services. You might have heard about our seed advisor, or we are looking for how do we provide better disease advisors or irrigation advisors. So at the end of the day, the farmer is looking for how can he increase the revenue of his farm or increase the profits. So the more we can help them by having a good understanding of the seed that the farmer is going to put on the field or provide recommendations on the of the seed that the farmer needs to put on the farm, by having the knowledge of the soil characteristics, by having the knowledge of the weather information, and looking at what are the management practices that he can grow through, bringing all that together, analyzing it, and providing a good recommendation on what seed to plant, at what density to plant, when to plant, how to manage that seed, how to harvest that seed to maximize the returns. Those are all the things that where predictive analytics come in play in enhancing the 40-plus, the so-called decisions that the farmer make during a season, mm-hmm. to enhance all those decisions that they are making.
And at the end of the day, it is improving lives.
Is it not,
Nalini? Because
yes.
Your yield is so much greater when you can take all these pieces and put them together and help them manage that.
Yes, it's increasing their income and improving the quality of the life for their family.
Right. I love the mission to feed the world.
that's
a big why.
That is what drew several of us, and we have almost 500 plus people in our company who are in data science associated fields, either doing data science or data science related work. And any of these people can go out and get jobs in any other industry. And it is the skills that they have are very transferable.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure many of those people are getting called several times a week.
They're
from
headhunters. Yes. Yes.
And the reason they chose to be with us, with a company like Bayer, is because of our mission for improving lives of the people, feed the world, and our promise for the planet, the sustainability goal that we have.
Mm-hmm.
So at the end of the day, it's that mission that is keeping all us together.
Yes.
And never a dull day.
Never a boring time.
Yeah.
Well, now I know that you are leading the women in data science at Bayer. Tell me about that. I mean, how have you grown that group? I mean, how many are in that group now?
Mm-hmm. Data science is a new field. It emerged primarily from computer science and engineering and math. As such, there are few women in STEM disciplines. And since data science is new, there are a few women here as well. Overall, there are only 10 to 15% women in this field. And if you look at the promise that the field has, it is there to improve lives of people. It is there to provide them new ways of living that was not there before.
Right.
So it's pretty much all over. And all this being developed by only one segment of the population provides a challenge. You need this diversity of thought and taking input from all different kinds of people who come from all walks of life.
Mm-hmm.
So we need, obviously, one of that is gender diversity. And so we need more women to come to this field. And we have a women in data science at Bayer. Our primary goal is how can we inspire more women to come into this field? How can we empower them? How can we grow them in skills or in areas where they need to develop? And at the end, how do we celebrate their successes?
Yes.
They are creating amazing, amazing things, and amazing impact is coming from them. How do we recognize them and celebrate them?
I love
that. So that's the main mission for us.
And I know you speak a lot, Nalini, and so that's one of the ways, right, to spread the message
mm-hmm.
about how exciting this is, how important mm-hmm. this work is.
Mm-hmm.
So that's wonderful. Well, this is called Something Extra. So I'd really like for you to talk about what is the Something Extra that you see embodied in one of your current or one of your former team members?
One thing that I have seen, Lisa, in my team or in people who went on to do big things is that passion. They truly believe that they're doing something extra or something big. It's passion for what they do. It's passion for improving lives. And particularly in the STEM fields, it's passion for how do you use technology to improve lives for better. That's the main thing. Many people, my team, several people who worked in other areas, they embodied this.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you this. This is kind of a little tangent here, but like you talk about passion, and I believe that so much. You have to have passion for what you do. What kinds of things do you do when you feel like your passion may be being diminished? What do you do to keep that fire fueled in your gut?
It does happen, Lisa. There are times when I was in situations where I didn't feel as much passionate. It's taking a step back, reminding myself of what I am there for, then taking a quick break. I'm into yoga. So I do yoga, and I just decompress myself. And inspiration, if you look for it, it's everywhere. I read quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
I watch people who have done amazing things, who have come with very little resources, but have done amazing things. And just hearing their stories or looking at them brings back my passion, and I tell mm-hmm. we have to do something too.
Right. Very good. Is there a leadership misstep, you know, where you saw something extra missing that you can talk about a little bit?
Yeah, there were quite a number of missteps and quite a number of failures. It was a fabulous 10-year journey. Along the way, too, we had quite a number of failures. As you can imagine, AI has done massive transformations in our company. But at the same time, it required quite an amount of change leadership. And we have underestimated how much change leadership that was required to move huge employee population to steer them in a different direction. You have to help them in several different ways, in upgrading the skills, mm-hmm. in thinking differently, in providing them resources on how they can apply in new ways, constant communication, engagement. It required quite a massive amount of that. And
right.
we made, many times we underestimated.
Mm-hmm.
And we learned from those mistakes and mm-hmm. We changed and we adapted.
Yeah, I say even those things that you go through like that, those hard things, I mean, it's all part of your growth journey, right?
Yes.
It's definitely part of your growth
journey.
I
learned quite a bit from that and I grew quite a bit
sure.
because of that.
And change is never easy. But I know that Monsanto has done it very well. And I learned a long time ago that you guys don't really call it change management. You're saying you're not managing people through the change. You're leading them through the change, which means they're watching you do the change as well.
Exactly.
Right?
It's the leadership behaviors and how leaders process through it.
Right. And they're watching that.
Yes.
So what do you believe, Nalini, is the something extra that every leader needs?
Truly caring for their people. One thing that inspired me to do more than I was capable of doing My PhD advisor, he's a professor at Georgia Tech, John McDonald. And he was always believing in me more than I did myself. He saw a potential in me that I didn't see myself. That really inspired me to do more and to stretch more. I thought that was true leadership. Mm-hmm. People come to you and you're their leader. They may not be seeing what they are capable of, but it's your job to know them really well and to identify those hidden talents, to help them see what they are, and then providing them opportunities to grow in that area. That's, I would say, every leader has to take it. If you have a title as a leader, it's your responsibility to know the person and to develop the person to where they can grow.
You could not have said that more beautifully. I so believe that and have heard that so many times. That's a common thread where so many times leaders have said, somebody saw something in me that I did not see in myself. And I just love that. But there's a lot of responsibility on that leader to do that.
Yes, right? It is.
To have their eyes open.
And also to be more open and not just seeing all the faults they have or the developments they need, but seeing more on where they can go.
I love that. You could not have said that more beautifully. I want to give you the opportunity. I know, like I said, you speak all the time. You're everywhere speaking. But I think you may have something coming up that you maybe want to tell our listeners about if they're in Chicago, or talk a little bit about that and how can they connect with you, Nalini?
Yeah, I speak at conferences and summits, Lisa. And one thing that is upcoming is I'm speaking at CDO Summit in Chicago in November. That's the Chief Data Officer Summit, and I'm doing a session on leveraging AI to transform the core business. And I have other speaking engagements coming in December, January. Usually I post those on LinkedIn, so if you want to know more information about this, connect with me on LinkedIn, and that's where you can get the information. And happy to have the listeners on the audience, or listeners can just reach out to me on LinkedIn and ask questions, and I'm happy to provide any suggestions or guidance.
Well, thank you so much. And Nalini, it has just been my pleasure to have you today. This has been so much fun for me, and I just know our listeners are going to enjoy hearing your story, learning a lot about data science and what data science can do for our world. So thank you for being here.
Thanks, Lisa. I enjoyed the conversation, and it's always a pleasure to talk to you. You have such a good positive energy and vibe, and I'm always thrilled to be in your space.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.